The ward was dark and gloomy, very different from our usual light and sunny rooms. A pall of murky twilight seemed to hover over it. Only slowly did it become apparent to us that something lay on the bed. I looked away quickly from the repellent sight. The poor creature's body appeared to be covered with sores and scars, the eyes were closed. "He thinks he is blind," Mother Florence whispered. "He is not, of course. But the light here is too bright and penetrating for him as yet, and he cries out that it has blinded him." The man was a terrible and pathetic sight. As I looked away again, I became aware of Father Joseph, who sat at the head of the bed behind the patient. Now I heard Father Joseph say, although there was no apparent sound in the room, "This poor unfortunate creature needs all our care and compassion. He has come to us to be healed and to be enabled to face himself and judge his deeds when he wakens from his terrible ordeal of darkness. Let us together concentrate our thoughts and blessings on him. Let us feel a gentle, soft healing light, God's healing force of the utmost sweetness and gentleness, pour out from our souls to his. Let us ask that light may come into this place, that it may touch him, comfort him, and give him sweet sleep." I looked round swiftly. There were Father Joseph, Mother Florence, Sister Hilda, Sister Cecilia, and myself. They looked utterly calm. Slowly, as I sank deeper into concentration, I felt myself swept up into a great joy and strength and power. The poor creature moaned, but I scarcely heard him. The ward had been dark. Gradually light grew in it. In one corner an intense shimmer of light became clearly visible, a light that condensed into a white, hot flame, like a pillar of fire. Then I knew that a celestial being had added his ray of spirit force. I found myself praying, not only for this tormented soul but also for the souls of his victims. Suddenly, in the midst of my prayers, I was transported back into the community chapel in South Africa. I heard the sisters singing, and I joined in, "Unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given." The hymn swelled. I was there, with the community, singing, yet I knelt here by the bedside of this lost, broken soul. I started because I felt that I must have been singing aloud, but no one moved. Then a voice echoed in my mind. And the words were similar to those of the Master Jesus. "Father, forgive him. He knew not what he did." I found myself on my knees gazing at the light, now slowly diminishing. It was an awareness so wonderful, and so shattering that I felt my whole self tremble. At that moment I had been at one with the sisters on earth in their prayers and intercessions for all sorts and conditions of mankind, as well as at one with this small band of dedicated and devoted servers of the light, and at the same moment at one with the penetrating white light of a great healing angel. There is no separation. We are all one. "Neither heaven nor earth nor hell can separate us from the love of God," I murmured to myself as the realization flooded me that the patient had literally come from hell to us. The great light faded slowly, but now the gloom had gone from the ward. Our patient lay still. The rigors of his body had ceased. He seemed to be asleep. In the next ward, Mother Florence was saying, "Is a woman who was one of his victims, a young Jewish mother who has arrived with him. She has been bound to him by her deep hatred. But she is progressing because she had real love in her heart for her husband and child who were snatched from her. She has the power of love in her soul. He, poor creature, has not. Yet. And," Mother Florence went on, "when he is healed sufficiently, they must confront one another and learn forgiveness, understanding, and charity." I was aware then that Father Joseph had slipped away. Mother Florence also left us, and the three of us remained behind to keep vigil. "Unto us a child is given, unto us a son is born," rang in my mind. The Christmas hymn seemed out of context. Yet the thought persisted in my mind, "This is a beginning, a birth. This is a new life being born, a soul being brought into light." Slowly I seemed to melt into an all, embracing meditation and contemplation upon God's peace and light, a depth of contemplation such as I had never before known. It was a most truly wonderful experience. At last, it seemed, I had broken through that barrier which throughout the entire period of my earthly life had barred my way. Of such a peace I cannot speak, for words cannot express it. But enough if I say, with all sincerity, that I felt I truly understood at last the meaning of those words, "My peace I give unto you. Not as the world gives, give I unto you." I had found a new measure, a new capacity, and I was awake in the light. I was carried in that peace to my own cottage where, later, I found myself. Our patient still sleeps. 5th January. I have been to visit the medical group again with Dr. X. It is the name by which I call the group, though I am sure that they have a more exalted title. I did not meet the leader of their group again. Maybe, as a very new girl, I have to learn to tune up my vibrations to meet him. This is merely a surmise on my part from the last experience. Nobody has informed me of this. You were correct in your idea about him. He is a very advanced soul, a master in his own right, and disciple of the Lord Jesus who, I have been told, lives in a plane far beyond this. On this subject I must stress that so much of the old theology of the Christian churches is at fault. It must be a rare occurrence, I imagine, for any newly arrived soul in this world to find himself at rest in the arms of Jesus. Not because of any lack of devotion, nor because Jesus is unaware of the soul's discipleship, but from the more practical standpoint it is only reasonable that souls must take into account the differences, and these are vital. In frequencies of vibration. No soul coming here from Earth's limitations, however advanced it may be in spiritual truth, is able to stand the stepped, up vibrations or the translucent light of these high planes. It appears from my observation during my time here that one has to earn every step of advancement. Did not the Master himself take 3 days before, as he said, "I ascend to my Father"? These cryptic words are much more understandable and translatable even from this plane of the astral than they could possibly be from the earth-level consciousness, perhaps, because at my previous visit when I was blessed enough to meet this great physician I felt used up and of a quite inadequate vibration to raise myself to the penetrating power of his light, another contact has not been permitted. Though I shall ever remember the beauty and love and light in his face and the dazzling luminous robe that he wore. Those of his group told me that the leader, it is easy to feel their reverence and respect for him, is not always with them. To our earthly way of thinking, which has not yet left me, he fulfills the role of director of their work and study. He visits them, it seems, when there is a new impulse in their researches to be studied and tested or, as in the case of Dr. X, when a new boy, so to speak, was to be interviewed and judged ready for admission. He is an inhabitant of planes beyond any of this medical fraternity in the priority group. Dr. X reveled in talking with his old associates, and with legendary figures of importance in the medical profession. Lister was amongst them. I was able to have a word or two with Pierre Curie, even though on Earth he was a Frenchman and my French was never fluent. Language affords no difficulty over here, and I yet do not know if I spoke in French or he in English. Or even if, in the earthly sense, we spoke at all. He referred to the sad prostitution of the usefulness of the atom and its power. Mankind is poisoning not only the earth on which these particles of atomic dust settle, but the atmosphere itself, the envelope of the earth sphere, as well as herbage and animal, bird and human life. I asked him if he now regretted his life work. He shook his head. Not at all. Progress must always present a dark and a light side to those who live almost entirely in the gloom of a slow inert vibration. Our work is to try to enlighten the vibrations of the earth plane so that these oppositions are not allowed to continue to act in negative ways. There can be no comparison, of course, between the ignorant mind, which was ready to fight for his belief that his world was square, and the partially freed mind which knows. Not only that the earth is a ball of matter that is forever circling, but also that it is merely a conglomeration of atoms held together by a fixed vibratory rate. Dr. X intervened. And what about the diseases man is bringing upon his kind through his abuses? And the possibility of complete annihilation by the very method of atomic power for destruction which he has discovered? Pierre Curie spread his hands in a gesture of resignation. Mankind must progress. It learns slowly, and such slow progress with many mistakes brings pain. But if you regard life from the angle of an eternal process, you get a different feeling about it. The life force is not expanded on only one terrestrial globe. Neither is it ended by being precipitated from that globe by what humanity calls death. Here we see a little further along the eternal road, but only a limited distance. As we learn to purify our vibrations, to enlighten our bodies and thus refine them into the actuality of receiving more light from the divine mind, so we progress onwards. Doors open to us which were closed before. Perception grows clearer and keener, and we are able to comprehend more fully the true meaning and purpose for which the life force has descended into the slowest and most inert vibration. And the people of Earth? The doctor persisted. Will return and return after they have made their souls more capable of transmitting this life force in order to transmute the density of Earth vibration into a higher frequency. And disease and destruction? I asked. Man will die, as he has ever done. As long as he believes that death is the end, disease and destruction will last. Suddenly I comprehended his meaning. Mankind is using palliatives, when the cure is within its grasp. Change the angle of belief, do away with the dread and fear of death, and teach the eternal oneness of life. That is redemption, both of man and of the earth. This may take thousands of years. But there are millions of years behind us. Man has taken centuries to lift his inert response thus far, but he is on an upward path. Here is the old answer again. Light and yet more light, light of understanding, of knowledge, of wisdom and true perception to penetrate this fog of illusion in which the mass of mankind still wanders. And you, I ventured to ask Curie, you work on this progress. He smiled. We are perhaps employed on the palliative side, to relieve and cure that which misapplied thought and energy and ignorance have crystallized. But in its way, that is light too. We left, much inspired. More than ever we realized the earth's crying need for light. Jesus came to show and demonstrate that man lived on after leaving the earth plane. He taught that this God force, this life is truly within every one of us, dim yet unextinguishable. He was not received by his fellows, yet his light, that high frequency of vibration which he was able to transmit to Earth, lives on. The doctor and I recalled that invocation which I repeated often when in the body, may light descend on Earth, may Christ return to Earth. I felt that I understood partly the deep meaning of that invocation now. 8th January. Our patient is still sleeping. He has not changed and possibly will continue to rest in this pure light of healing and love until his soul has regained sufficient strength and peace to begin its long progress onwards. I have talked with the Jewish girl who arrived with him. She has recovered sufficiently to begin to reorient her thought, to change the angle of her thinking. She was a good woman, that is, she was moral and kind and loving. But it will take much instruction and gentle working out of her problems before she will be enabled to view the horror of what happened to her in an objective manner. The old ingrained eye for an eye, and tooth for a tooth belief has to be transmuted through this new angle of judging into an appreciation of love as the instigator of life. Already some of the virulent hatred is dissolving as she now realizes that the avenger receives nothing constructive or worthwhile by insisting on recompense. Mother Florence told her about the poor soul who was the instigator of her tragedies, and she knows that he is even now resting, and being healed. So far she can scarcely bear to think of his being healed, but she will. Now all that she asks is to be reunited with the husband and child who were taken from her. Her own sufferings in the camp to which she was taken and where she later died are being obliterated in her consciousness as she is learning to relax and let go of the earthly life and all the terror and hate in it, and to live in the light. Her husband, who was a German lawyer, was rounded up and transported to a labor camp where he too, later, died from injuries and exposures. She never knew what happened to her little girl. Mother Florence tells me that the husband has been located. He did not hold the hatred in his soul so deeply or so bitterly and has progressed more easily. He has awaited the arrival of the wife he loved and has continually sent her love and light, even whilst she was sojourning in those shadowy worlds of the lower astral bound by the hate bonds to the man who had caused the tragedies. Perhaps it was the very fact of that light sent down to her and to the soul of the man who was responsible for the cruelties, which helped to set them free from the underworld, so that messengers could bring them here. In the nature of consciousness, which is the way here of saying in the fullness of time, he will come to meet her. They will be reunited and will go their way together. Of the child I know nothing. Our scientist Mr. M. has left us. He is not yet ready, I understand, to work in the higher spheres, or even to join a band who are connected with those who work in such a sphere, but he has recovered and become more ready to accept the truths he had rejected on the earth. But he has to make right a lack that was in his personality life, a lack of love. He was always so absorbed in a logical, reasoning mind when on earth that he had no time for the usual feelings for his fellow men. He was frightened of being involved by love, so he never married or felt affection for any woman. He lived entirely for himself and for his work. Now he has gone to rejoin, for a while, his mother, father and sisters, and so learn to be part of a family unit. You know that we are all parts of a family or a group, and if we refuse to accept this, either in the fulfillment of family life, group life or community life when on the earth plane, or refuse to cooperate unselfishly with such groups when we have the chance, we are held back here from progress until we have made good that lack. So he will join in and practice unselfishness and give freely of his sympathy, love and compassion in service to his companions before he will be allowed to go on and rejoin the scientific research which is his great desire. For myself, I have been going through a sort of cleaning out process, and in this dear Mother Florence has been as helpful, gentle and understanding with me as she was in the months preceding my final profession into the religious life. She is a wonderful soul and has voluntarily given her service to these her fellow beings in the work of this home. But she visits other spheres, I am certain, although she has never told me so. She goes away from us, and when she returns I am certain she is not wearing the usual habit which is her accustomed clothing. Once I met her just as she came back to us. Her face was radiant. I was sure then that she was clothed in the robe of the spirit. It was a deep blue robe of great beauty. Later, without any explanation, she resumed the habit in which she greets our patients. Mother Cecilia is also only with us occasionally. As for my own life here, I retire more and more to the deep joy and peace and rest of my garden amongst my flowers. You recall that I could never sit and enjoy relaxation in my garden when on earth. I was always too anxious to get on with my jobs. Over here there is no such urgency. More and more I am learning to let go of urgency and to let my soul sink deeply and refreshingly into contemplation of the joy of the spirit. This develops into what you would call a dream life, yet it is really a stretching out of the soul to a wider consciousness. I revel in light and peace and a new joy. I cannot describe it more clearly than that. If I say that now I understand the meaning of the phrase "rest in the Lord," that might help. Yet there is no personality about this experience. God is light, energy and joy to me. I rest in that light and am healed from my many mistakes. And I live a more abundant life. 11th January, I call him the man on a bicycle. He is a soul who has been here in this home for a long time by earth standards. He was killed in a bicycle accident, I should imagine, just before, or early in, the First World War, because he couldn't recollect anything about any war when I talked with him. Here he is in what I call my psychiatric ward. He was a sneak, thief. He made an art of stealing and he was never caught. He was killed when his bicycle got out of control on a steep hill because the brakes did not act. He ran into the car, one of the early vintage, of a woman he had systematically robbed for years, vegetables from her garden, cash from her house which he had broken and entered. As she was in business in the town where he lived, he knew her hours of absence from home. She never suspected him. It seems he was very expert at forcing window, catches and climbing drain, pipes. He worked as a laborer, but he had ideas. One was that all things are free. He was right, of course, in a way. All things should be free, and if man had reached such a stage of evolution, so it would be. But man has not. Everything is free here, of course. That is one of his stumbling blocks in our long and rather involved talks together. It's free here. Why shouldn't it have been free for all there? He keeps asking. Can you see our difficulty? We have to teach him that morally he was wrong, though spiritually the world and its absorption with possessions was wrong too. Only he still refutes the suggestion that he was overwhelmed with the desire for possession. He is a strange locked, up soul, willing and helpful, but he cannot seem to get past his dog beliefs, nor to adapt himself to the new life here. He works about the home. His limited intelligence has not even yet realized that he need not go to call the sisters, or dig to plant the flowers. So he goes on his own old way, and we talk to him and try to persuade him to accept this new phase of life which he has entered. He appears to have become static, and so he may remain until his higher self is awakened in him. He is perfectly content with being where he is and is not at all aspiring to anything more real. Reality. What is it? What an illusion thought is. I thought I was real enough on Earth. Now I realize that what seemed important and substantial and worthwhile was but a shadow of a shadow. I'm not really real here. This too is merely the shadow which is but a shell, or covering, of something else. I'm on a journey still. Perhaps to the center, certainly to a higher point, but what this is I scarcely dare imagine. I've only peeled off the outer shadow yet. The outer skin. Rather like peeling skins from an onion. One goes on shedding, it seems an eternal process. In my long contemplative times, when the spirit in me rises and seems to take flight towards the next step, I become uplifted and eager, so very eager, for that succeeding stage. Yet I know that I have to remain where I am and do just what I am doing until I have shed more of the shadow, covering. You know, I always wanted to go forward too quickly. Often I visualized happenings and incarnation ahead. Remember how we used to talk? I would envisage great beings walking with men on Earth. That time will come, no doubt. Perhaps is already happening, but men have no vision to see. Now of course I recognize the drawbacks, men would not yet be ready to receive them. Even in this stage, beyond the physical imitations, our patients would not be able to believe, let alone accept, the appearance of great ones. I have been blessed indeed, for I have been permitted to meet such a great one in the beloved physician of the doctor's group. But then I came here expecting such. The planes of the spirit stretch onward into infinity. What joy it will be, going forwards, gravitating, even though slowly, to one's true place. I presume each plane will seem real, will have more reality than the preceding one. That sounds like a paradox. But reality itself? It is quite beyond our comprehension. I have talked long with Mother Florence upon this. She is so much further advanced, she seems to pass at will between the planes. Yet she admits there is so much more, infinitely much more, beyond that to which she is admitted. I long to go on, to view those planes of light, to touch those great lives, yet I am content here and happy. As one must be. You can't push yourself into heavens beyond you. The law of progression is exact. But I am trying to shed some of the clutter of the personality. We all have to do that. And there are three ways in which to carry it out here. By self, judgment, and true assessment of experiences, by service to one's fellows, and by aspiration. Not so different, you will say, from the earth life after all. But oh, with so many, many compensations. I can express it best in this thought, the subjective of the earth plane mind has become the objective in this new state of being. This I begin to comprehend, is the law of progress. By it we advance onwards into realms of incredible beauty and wonder. How can I make this clear, the subjective or inner content of my thoughts, aspirations and desires here and now will fashion the objective place to which I will pass on the next stage of my journey, just as, the inner life of the soul within the body, mind on earth decides the first future home on this level. More and more important, therefore, and invaluable, is the inner life of meditation and contemplation, and that, one, meant with divine beauty and truth. The saying, on earth as a man thinks, so is he, is true in essence, truer than our ideas can conceive. By man's thoughts and inspirations he weaves for himself his future place in this dimension. This is logical law. In the earth life he can build a facade about himself. Here he has no such mask. He is known here for what he is, and for what his inner subjective life has made him. Think then of the importance of light in the soul. The intensity and power with which light illumines the inner life are objectified here. The newly transported soul graduates always to its rightful place, to the place it has earned and prepared. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven may be taken as having a factual meaning. 13th January we had an arrival who did not stay with us. After a rest she continued on her way. This was an interesting case. This was a woman who had been nurse and missionary for many years of her life in Africa, and had lived the Christian religion. She was put to death when there had been an uprising by the natives, and with her, a small native boy whom she had befriended. They had arrived here together, for it seemed that even in the period of transition to this plane she had held the child to her with love. This is a woman whom, if I had not learned better, I could find within myself to envy. She is such a beautiful soul, with the light of love surrounding her like a halo. Her first words, when she became conscious of her surroundings, were, "I knew I would wake up amongst sisters. Thank God. It is wonderful." There was, in her mind, no question of surviving the terrible ordeal through which she had met death. There were no recriminations, no fears, and most impressive of all, no hatreds. She exuded unselfish love. Her quick concern was for the little dark-skinned boy. When she learned that he was here with her safely sleeping, she almost wept with joy. "You see, I promised his parents who went on some time before, that I would look after him," she said. "Now I can really rest a while." She was a joy to us all here, a soul full of light and beauty. She and I had great talks. I told her of my visit to the doctors and of the great physician who is their leader. She was thrilled and uplifted. I knew that soon she would find herself in the presence of some great soul. "But not before little Larky has been restored to his own parents," she insisted. So the sisters set out to find the boy's parents. I do not mean, of course, that they did this in the physical sense in which we would have done it on earth. They concentrated, asking for help from the great ones who direct the newly arrived souls. They also sent out their thoughts to contact the beam on whose ray these souls were abiding. And a contact was made. A messenger arrived with a guide, and little Larky went on to his rightful place. His foster mother was overjoyed, for she knew that she would be able to visit him and help him as she had done when in the physical body. Here I must say a word about the boy. A child is so much nearer to the soul, life. Even this child's few short years on earth, 6 I believe, had scarcely separated him from his before birth contact with divine love. This love had been continued for him by his missionary mother. He accepted our new life with a quiet wonder and yet a fulfilled joy. He loved us all, and once he told Mother Florence of a great angel whom, he said, he had seen with us in the home. "For me it has been a precious and wonderful experience to have witnessed the re-birth here of such innocence, the soul of this child, unpolluted, untainted by the materialism and separation of earth beliefs, was so ready for the heaven world. I can express it best by saying it was like a bud opening into flower here. Please write this and stress it, for it will, I feel, give comfort to those fathers and mothers who may have been separated by what the world calls death from their little ones." Larky rejoined his people. Our missionary rested with us. To me she was a lesson without words. How much I learned from her. For she was indeed one of the chosen. Her brief sojourn with us here helped me to re-think over my old set of values. We do make the mistake of valuing intellect too highly in the earth life, scorning the simple follower of reality. This woman has intelligence but not a trained or well-developed intellect. but she lived daily from the true center of herself. In other words, the spirit was her daily guide, and every problem, every difficulty and every joy she took to this master within. She radiated peace and love and joy, and death had meant little to her. She was well acquainted with the inner voice and obeyed the higher will.